initially no one wanted to go into the Yam Suf. Right? And it's not until Nachshon ben Aminadav jumped in, the leader of Yehuda. And that's why we say, B'tzeis Yisrael mi-Mitzrayim, Beis Yehuda me'am lo-yoyiz. When B'nai Yisrael left Mitzrayim, Yehuda, the Shevet, became his sanctified one. He says, the rebellion, the first one, supposedly, is Vayamru al-Hayam. They rebelled on this. So what do the extra words, B'yam Suf, in the actual sea indicate? It says, the Yidden started complaining. The ground is muddy. We're getting dirty. It's not easy to walk through these pillars of water. And my friend says, what did they expect? Has anybody ever gone to where the water recedes for the first immediately? It's wet. We know sand gets wet, right? And he says, Reuven said to Shimon, in Mitzrayim we were immersed in mortar, and now again we're immersed in the bottom of the sea. In Egypt, the mortar was the main production material for bricks. And now with split waters, again we have mud. The Medrash, my friend says, is totally amazing. It's not that it's all that amazing, he says. I don't know why he says that, but anyway, he says, it's the reaction of the human beings that blows his mind. He says, the Egyptians are behind us, the Yam Suf in front of us. There's nowhere to go. We daven to Rabbeinu Shel Olam, and Hashem says, tell Klal Yisrael, move, go forward. One of the greatest miracles in all of history occurs, the splitting of Yam Suf. And hello? And someone, hey! Guys, hey! Whoever's cooking!
To mute conference participants, press 1. To all participants are muted and they can unmute themselves.
I don't know if anybody's left or not. I'm just going to continue. The reaction of the people is surprising. If we're being saved from a debacle, do we really care if it's muddy? How can you complain? And moreover, we're told repeatedly that the generation redeemed from Mitzrayim was a generation known as Dor Dea, knowledgeable people. He says we should never, ever, when we look at that generation, attempt to abuse them, try to denigrate them. Whatever the Torah says are shortcomings, right? We've got to understand they may have been, but that did not take away from their greatness. He says, but something seems amiss. He says, in retrospect, when we look at the problems Moshe Rabbeinu had, it seems that they frequently lacked happiness. And later on, we learn, B'nai Yisroel say to Moshe, we need meat. All we have is bun for breakfast, bun for lunch, bun for supper. In the good old days in Egypt, he said, right? We had vegetables, we had cucumbers, we had little fishalach, fishies. Rashi says that the mun was tremendously flavored. I don't know what a coriander seed is. The mun was special, beautiful, and yet they could find a complaint. And he said, we've got to understand that mun was a juxtaposition between something physical and spiritual. It had whatever taste you wanted it to have. It was something that produced no bodily waste. It was totally absorbed. It was free. There was no high cholesterol. There was no lack of fiber or anything. It was the perfect means of sustaining the Jewish people. And Rabbi Franz says, maybe we can learn a little bit about people and attitudes. There are some people that no matter what are born to be miserable. Or the old cliche, I'm not happy unless I'm miserable. The Kutzker Rebbe says, they came to Mora, they couldn't drink the water because Morim Haim, quote, they were bitter. The meaning Mora Haim normally would mean that the water was bitter. The Kutzker says, no, Haim, the people. The people were in a rotten mood, right? They were bitter and they complained, just like they complained about the mun. Nothing. There was no good in their eyes. Now, we're going to ask the question, how many, right? Could it possibly be all the Jews? And we don't have the answer to these questions. But Rabbi Franz says, if nothing else, we're being taught that it is a tragedy to walk into life, to walk around life with this attitude. The tale was told about a chassid who went to his Rebbe and he said, oh, things are so terrible. And I'm sure he had a very hard life. And he asked the Rebbe, give me advice how I can withstand that. And he said, I can't answer. Go see Rav Zusha. Rav Zusha, when he encountered him, was encountering boils on his body significantly. He wore rags. He looked so impoverished that the chassid was just demoralized looking at him. And Rav Zusha smiled and said to the visitor, Reb Yid, how can I help you? And he said, the Rebbe told me I should come to you to understand how to live in a world with much suffering. Rav Zusha said, it's got to be a mistake. I don't suffer. I've never suffered in my life. Everything is good. Gamzu Latova. He said, I have everything I need, and the Kaddish Baruch Hu gives it to me. And Rabbi Franz says, I conclude, as I've often concluded, that there are two types of people in the world. Those who see the glass half empty and those who see it half full. He says the job of Shomer Torah Mitzvot is to always look positively to the extent possible on everything. We read yesterday, beginning of the Parsha, that the Jews were taken through the land of the Philistines, the Plishtim. Right? God led them that way, which was a longer way. Right? It says, Ki Karev Hu, right? Right? And they say the way to going to Eretz Yisroel through the land of Plishtim is an indication of the shorter geographical distance. The Das Zakenim, Mibale Toisvai, say something else. Ki Karev Hu, the nation of Klal Yisroel is like a relative of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. The Hu refers to the nation, and Korov means family member. These are HaKadosh Baruch Hu's intimate family members. The Das Zakenim says, as a result of this relationship, God did not lead them a normal way, by the coastal route the other people took. Sometimes, he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu treats his children in a fashion that seems totally inexplicable. The reason for this is Ki Karev Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a special way in leading Klal Yisroel, stemming from the fact that they are his Bnei Bechori, his eldest, his Bechor. Rav Simcha Zisel Brody, who was the head of the Chevron Yeshiva, said, we encounter bumps on the road of life, and we will quickly react, why is the Kodesh Baruch Hu giving me this deterrent, this problem? And he said, maybe what we have to realize at all times is Ki Karev Hu. This is the result of being close to the Ribbono Shel Olam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does what is best. We cannot see it. We do not in any shape, manner, form have divine wisdom or foresight. And he said, that was the message. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that the way he was taking them to Eretz Yisroel was going to take them to Har Sinai. They were going to get the Torah. And had the Meraglim never happened, they would have been, and had the Egel never happened, they would have been in Eretz Yisroel very shortly after Shavuos of the first year. That was a divine way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to lead them. We're told that there are things Chazal compare to the splitting of the sea. Rav Shizbi says, one's parnasa, livelihood, is as difficult to achieve as the splitting of the sea. And Rabba Bar Rav Chana says, in the name of Rav Yochanan, that making shiduchim is as difficult as splitting the sea. Right? He says, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said, it's not just the creation of the Zivug, the introduction. It's what goes on in marriage. Having a successful marriage is also akin to crossing a sea. My friend says, everybody knows that we could, Baruch Hashem, make a living yesterday. But there's no guarantee what happens today or tomorrow. He says, most people have to engage in parnasa for the better part of their lives, right? If you're a salaried person, you've got to work towards promotions, etc. You've got to make sure that nobody below you can grab your spot. There's no coasting, he says. Coasting is losing. And so day in and day out, you've got to work at what you're doing. Similar to splitting a sea. Rav Yaakov says that there is a second. I'm sorry. Rav Yaakov says that the connection between parnasa and marriage, he says, you can't coast in a marriage like a business. He says, you can take your business and after having run it successfully for 30 years, you can do something reckless and you bankrupt it. You see something that you think is a risky deal with a tremendous upside and it goes sour. He says, marriages are the same way. Rav Yaakov says, you can take risks in a marriage, but be aware that too can go bankrupt. Yeah. Give me a minute. Somehow the stuff I've got. Okay. Where's the Gemara with the Rav? We know that the Shira, which we're going to read on Shabbos, and that we daven every day, is Oz Yashir Moshe. Oz means then, but Yashir doesn't mean fang, it means will thing in the future. Query. If Yam Suf happened thousands of years ago, how is it that we still have Moshe to thing in future? The Medrash tells us, and the Gemara quote, I think we'll quote it as well. This is one of the proofs of Tchias HaMesim in the Torah. In other words, Moshe and Klal Yisrael are going to sing once again about the crossing. Where my friend says, one of the 13 Ikrim we know of the Rambam, the 13 principles of faith, is that Hashem's going to bring Mashiach and Techiyas HaMesim. And when that happens, Klal Yisroel and the Jews, presumably who were there at that time, are going to again sing the Shira to teach maybe the other Yidden the importance of what happened. B'nai Yisroel experienced leaving Mitzrayim. And on the seventh day of Pesach, 6 days thereafter, they saw the crossing of the Reed Sea, the splitting, and were told that even the most simple handmaiden at the sea had a prophetic vision greater than the greatest prophecy the Navi Yecheskel had. And he saw the Malachim, he saw the Kisei HaKavod, he saw the Holy Chariot, and other things. Chazal say that this simple hand servant had greater understanding and appreciation of spiritual matters than the Navi. It says, when Klal Yisrael saw this and had this level of truth, right, could they any longer not believe? He says, contrary to the popular saying that seeing is believing, that is not the case. Someone sees what's in front of their face. But if I see my cell phone, I'm not believing it's there. I'm seeing that it's there. He says, the level of amuna is such that I can say, I believe, and therefore I see. In other words, my belief has so grown within me that I can truly see, maybe we'd say understand, appreciate, the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has told us. The power of emunah, faith, is greater than the power of sight. Sight is a constriction of that which is a dimension of the world. We know HaKadosh Baruch Hu is way beyond that. And with emunah, right, we can somehow get to a higher appreciation. He says, now I'm going to explain what it means that Klal Yisroel are going to sing again, and that Techiyas HaMesim is learnt from this event. He said, Klal Yisroel at this stage developed, acquired so much emuna, so much faith, that they could actually see, they could understand that Techiyas HaMesim will definitely happen. Ken nishtein anders, can't be anything but. He said they had reached the level where the 13 principles of the Rambam, as he delineates them, were so obvious, based on what they perceived in sight, being translated into the sight of belief, that there were no questions anymore. And that's why, he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows that the message, or one of the messages of Oz Yashir, is the fact that Techiyas HaMesim is proved from these words. It's because of the need for emunah to believe in Techiyas HaMesim, and that this creates the reality.